Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how are Western Muslims distorting the true message of Islam?
A number of videos recently uploaded online have sparked controversy in Britain.
We are Muslim Patrol.
Young Muslims in the east of London, calling themselves the Muslim Patrol, filmed themselves harassing and hurling insults at the non-Muslim public. They claim to be enforcing Sharia law in what they described was a Muslim area.
No drink in this area, this is a Muslim area.
Okay, we have taken it upon ourselves.
The offensive videos received thousands of views and comments online and have prompted the arrest of five of the self-proclaimed Muslim vigilantes. Muslims across Britain and the West, including the Imam at the local East London mosque, have condemned and disassociated from this un-Islamic approach.
Islam is here in London.
This week's Islam and Life asks, how are Western Muslims distorting the true message of Islam?
This is quite important and urgent to come to an intra-community dialogue among Muslims about what is the accepted diversity within Islam and what are the wrong interpretations and sometimes unacceptable interpretation of Islam when it comes to dealing with people of other faiths or dealing with a society where the Muslims are in majority or in minority, such as in the UK, but also in other countries in the West. So how can we explain this distortion of Islam from within when it comes to young Muslims and coming outside and saying we are going to implement Islam the way they are doing it by being aggressive, by attacking people of other faiths, and by coming to a very narrow understanding, if not, in fact, a wrong understanding of Islam, from an accepted diversity to distortion. There is a spectrum here that we have to discuss, that we have to challenge, and it's for the Muslims to be quite clear on what is acceptable and what is anti-Islamic done by Muslims with a wrong understanding of Islam. These are questions that are critical if we look at what is happening around the world and sometimes in which way these distorted understanding of Islam are used by people to launch campaign against not only the extremist or the terrorist, as it is said, by Muslims wherever they are. And to answer all these questions, I'm joined by social and political commentator Muhammad Ansar. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let me start with this understanding, because very often when we speak with political experts or sociologists or theologians in the West, we have to come to an understanding that yes, Islam is one, but there are many interpretations. There is something which from the very beginning in Islam is accepting the fact that the scholars themselves were not agreeing on everything and that there were many schools of law from the very beginning. How would you explain this from within Islam, this dynamic that in Islam there is something which is intra mutual respect among the scholars, that we have to still keep whatever is done by some young Muslims in the name of Islam, which is wrong?
I think it's a really interesting point you raise, and it's something that is largely misunderstood by people in the West generally. We have this increasing pressure and force of secularization. It's something that the Christian and the Christianic communities have been through with the Reformation. They're used to having a pressure put on them and schisms appearing and dividing on not only theological but largely cultural issues, where we've seen within Europe Western and Eastern Christendom divide into different traditions, and they have their different traditions of faith traditions. Now, as Islam re-emerges into the West, we're finding pressure being put on the Muslim communities to define themselves within a modern secular society. And part of the problem and part of the challenge we have is there is a distinct lack of dynamic, contemporary, Islamic leadership within the West. And so Muslims are essentially like ducks out of water. They are thrown into a society over the course of decades where they don't necessarily have the authentic framework to be able to construe a good Islamic reference.
Let me come to that point, because it's quite interesting you are talking about what is happening from within the Western Muslims and the Western Muslim communities, that they are under pressure. Something is happening still. When we look at what is happening in Muslim majority countries, and if you look at what is happening in Africa these days and in some Asian countries and Arab countries, very often we still have some groups that are coming with a very narrow understanding of Islam and saying, we are the only true interpretation of Islam. And if we look at what we just watched on the video, it's exactly the same, that some young people, very often there are young people coming with a very narrow understanding, telling all the people, we are the true Muslims and you are not. From where comes this distortion as to the understanding of Islam?
I think certainly within the UK, if we take the UK as a model, as a dynamic, we have parents who have come to the UK who are largely cultural Muslims. They haven't necessarily had a good emphasis and grounding either in scholarship or learning about Islam, non-Arab speakers, and they've come here and largely their job and their role has been to put down roots, to establish the families, to get jobs. There are many criticisms about some of the cultural identity, about it being post-colonial, but nonetheless, they have had a very specific and a very well-defined job in terms of coming here. Now, the next generations and the younger generations are looking for some very clear leadership, and I think they're finding that that isn't in place. And so what happens is, and it's something we've seen across the world, we've also seen in the United States, where the fundamentalist right of many Christian organizations and the Bible Belt are finding a hardening in their view. And this seems to be in response to what are being perceived as social ills, as social difficulties. Mm. And so I think we can approach this it's a very complicated picture, and we have lots of rivers flowing into this lake. But what we see is that we see a lack of authentic understanding around Islam and Islamic issues, and people cherry-picking and picking and choosing the bits they want to follow.
But listening to you, is it because you are talking about the fact that there is a lack of leadership? Who's responsible, the leadership or the followers? Because you are talking about both at the same time.
Well, when you have a multifaceted problem like we do here, and a challenge, we have to look at the different causes and then try and tackle them. Mm. We need to get our ducks in a row. Mm. And so one part is around leadership, one part is around education and stewardship of the Islamic identity within the West. But at the same time, we need to look at the failure of many governments, of many societies, addressing some of the social ills. For example, the video we've seen now shows young men in East London reacting in reprehensible ways to non-Muslims. They are talking to them about alcohol, they are talking to them about their sexuality. They don't have an understanding that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, didn't take any action against anybody who was a homosexual. They sometimes don't have an understanding that actually within the scriptures there's very little punishment laid out for people who are of different sexualities. And in fact, there are many contemporary scholars today, I think, who would say that actually Islam has a lot to offer in a secular society about tolerance, about diversity, about having a greater understanding and respect for peoples from other traditions and beliefs.
So if I listen to you and the way you are talking about how do we have to understand Islam and to educate ourselves, still there is a great deal of responsibility on the leadership, on the people who are educating the Muslims. And still it's a vicious circle, because what we see with this is that even if, you know, the people, the imams in the mosque and the people around are condemning, saying this is not Islam, this is anti-Islamic, we don't do things like this because this is not the model of the Prophet, peace be upon him. This is not the way our scholars were dealing with such issues and leaders. And you have here something which is quite interesting, young Muslims using Islam and translating this into something which is a crisis of authority. They are dealing with imams and the Islamic or Muslim establishment, the way they can deal with parents and the way they can deal with teachers and the way they can deal with politicians by saying, you are wrong, and we are in this situation because your authority is not a legitimate authority. So we are dealing with two problems, something which is very Western problem about authority. Can we deal with this, and how would be the first step to reform that?
It's often been said that it takes a village to raise a child. And this is a model that traditional older communities understand, but it's a model that we're failing with in Western society today. We see governments who are increasingly out of touch. We see, for example, tax cuts for the rich, and then the greatest burden of taxation in society put upon the poor. We see increasing inequality, and even amongst the hardest to reach groups, even amongst those who are at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladders, we see the inequality gap opening up amongst the lowest groups in society as well. And so actually we have to contextualise a lot of these problems. And we have, within the UK for example, approximately 80% of Pakistani and Bangladeshi communities on or below the poverty line, compared to one in five of white British families. We have a perception that Muslims are a problem in society. They don't want to integrate, they don't contribute, mosques are a problem, Muslims are a problem, there are too many of them. You know, these great Islamophobic myths that are being peddled about Muslims and integration and contribution in the West. However, when we speak to Muslim communities, we see that they are young, we see they're vibrant, and they want to have solutions to the problem. So the young people are wondering, who has the Islamic reference? Because the older communities, they look towards their elders in the communities, they look towards people in the mosques, and often there is a failure in terms of bridging the gap, whether that's from parents, whether that's from people who hold the reins of scholarship and the intellectual and the academic leaders within the society, within the various communities, they don't feel a connection to them.
I very much like the fact that you are connecting this with also the socio-economic realities, and we have to contextualize, and I think that this is essential. While at the same time, we have to be very cautious, and I want you to react on this, because very often in the West, when we say things like this, the people are saying, okay, once again, you play the victim, it's the victim mentality, the social context is to be blamed, and it's not these people. More than that, even if we, you know, after 7/7 in this country, we're trying to understand who are the people who can be violent and extremist, and we had to acknowledge the fact that the great majority of the leaders within were not facing social problem. They were educated. Some of them got, you know, PhDs, and so it's not about, you know, being completely disenfranchised from the society. It's very much about an understanding of Islam. So what is, from someone who is dealing with Muslims at the grassroots level, what should be the answer to this? Because we cannot just say it's the socio-economic context. While I think it's essential, I think it's quite important, but there is something which is the very understanding of the Islamic principles, and some have a political understanding of the use of these principles that could be very, very damaging for the Muslims wherever they are.
I think that's a really good and fair point. We have often the accusation that's put towards Muslims is, you are creating a straw man, you are using the one true Scotsman model of Islam, which is something we have to answer, because of course we do have a consensus within scholarship around what are the core components of Islamic principles of tolerance and understanding and diversity, and there is nothing within Islam that should breed or give rise to any degree of intolerance, and it is completely unacceptable the behaviour of Muslims, not only in the UK, but in the States, in the Middle East and elsewhere, who decide that they want to take the law into their own hands. They decide that actually they want to behave in ways that are un-Islamic because they feel that the leadership isn't there, and so they decide that they absorb for themselves, they take ownership and responsibility themselves of what they believe to be a true interpretation of Islam. But of course, we find this is narrow. We find this is far removed from the example of the Prophet, peace be upon him. We find it's far removed from actually the social agenda. So when we look, for example, if we contextualise this problem particularly, and we zoom in for a moment, we've seen over the last 5 years, homophobic attacks in that part of London have doubled over the last 5 years. We've also seen that the number of exclusions from schools, and this is an area of London which is almost 40% Muslim population there. We've also seen the number of exclusions due to troubles in schools have also doubled over the last 5 years. Mm. We see this population have increased over 50% over the last 10 years. So these problems haven't just appeared today. 2 years ago, there were a series of articles released in the British media about the Islamification and the Islamization of this part of London. And there were talks about aggressive young Muslim men who were deciding to be the moral arbiters of society. Yes, they were becoming effectively absolutely the Muslim patrols, vigilantes that were putting stickers up and doing these kind of things. So these problems don't occur overnight. These problems take generations, they take decades to fester. And actually, when we start, and sadly, we do have to apportion blame and responsibility and say we need to tackle these issues. Well, the local government has failed. The central government has failed in the engagement with Muslims. While we monitor and track homophobic attacks, we don't monitor and track Islamophobic attacks. Mm. Even though it's been a strategic priority for police forces across the country, we see a failure in political leadership, and we also find a failure to within Muslim communities to address these problems from within as well. And it's a dialogue, a mature dialogue, we really need to start having.
Mm-hmm. I think that is it. Let me start with the second half of your answer here, which is about what should be done by the Muslims. At the end of the day, we look at this, we can say, they might not know about Islam enough about Islam, they might be not educated, they might sometimes be pushed to do something that they think it's Islamic, which is not. What should the Muslim communities or the leadership do in order to prevent this while respecting the accepted diversity and saying there are limits where what you do if you do this is no longer Islamic, this is against Islam?
Yeah. Islam has to become relevant for these young people in their lives. It is not good enough anymore, and they may have gotten away with it for a small period of time, but I think, you know, I think that veil has been lifted now. Mm. I think people are realizing, actually, without having a contemporary understanding of how Islam has to be applicable in a modern society, without moving away from the core principles of authentic Islam, these young people, and we need to work with the younger generations, and these first things start in education. They start in education within the secular society. So part of the work that I'm doing is working with teachers to come to a better understanding. And
Muslim teachers, or teachers in the schools?
Teachers within state school systems
and
teachers federations to look at how we teach Islam. If you talk to a Muslim about five pillars, they don't know what you're talking about. They think you're talking about architecture. Mm. You know, we need to come firstly to a better understanding of and a better teaching of Islamic theology within schools, within classrooms. We also need to talk about a better understanding of the Muslim and Islamic contribution, which, in fairness, to some degree, has been almost censored from within the Western context. We become more Aristotelian. We refer more to Hellenistic traditions, and we move further away from the Muslim traditions. Now, what
to give
will
a better image of Islam, to value Islam.
Well,
for
I think
religions.
The important thing is saying a fair image.
A fair image.
Right, a fair image, and reflecting the fair contribution. It's not good enough nowadays when you're teaching young children to start from the Romans, to have a hop and a skip to the Tudors and Stuarts and the Middle Ages, and then come on to talk about the First and Second World War. Where's the rest of the history? Mm. Where's the rest of the education?
But look, there is something quite interesting. I want you to react on this. Mm. I ask you what to do from within. And your answer is what we do in the state school system and with teachers who are not Muslims. So once again, the answer is going to come from outside the community?
No, absolutely not. If you can unpack this slightly, we talk about the problem, which is the problem with education, for not only for Muslims, but also for non-Muslim children in the modern context. Well, Muslims are going to need to engage. They are going to need to open their doors. They're going to need to come out of their shells and become more involved. They're going to need to be involved in local politics. They're going to need to be involved in secular education. They're going to need to be involved in every facet of society, firstly, to give a fair representation, to undermine the narrative of grievance that young Muslims feel in society today. Mm. Once we have the education field beginning to improve, and all we're asking for is a fair crack of the whip, All we're asking for is a fair representation. The next element has to be engagement. Engagement within the political infrastructures, engagement within the social agendas, engagement within the contemporary social and economic context, because we have huge challenges to deal with.
Okay, so this is the big picture. Give me just a quick answer to this question. If you have this young from the Muslim patrols and these people who are going to say to the people, don't drink alcohol, you do this, that's wrong, and that is not Islamic. And they are saying they are not. They are not playing the victim, and they are not in a state, you know, of grievances. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite. We are assertive, and we aren't Islam here in this country. What would be your answer? What would you tell them?
I would sit with them, and firstly, I would talk to them about the historic context within Islam, because they believe they have the Islamic reference, they believe they have the answers, and they believe that they need to enforce and implement those answers. So I think we need to begin to unwind some of this narrative and reapproach it, perhaps from another angle. So I would talk to them about the fact that since the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab, where he went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and he refused to pray in the church for fear that it would become a mosque.
Do you think it's going to have an impact on that?
I think if you have to remember that the anti-Western rhetoric is often wrapped up with a homophobic rhetoric, often an anti-Semitic rhetoric. These issues are not taken in isolation. And if we can talk about an Islam which is enlightened, which is tolerant, if we could talk about an Islam which actually, after the Christians at that time had excluded the Jews from Jerusalem for centuries, it was the Muslims who reinvited them back to Jerusalem with 70 families coming back in. If we can talk about how, in fact, while different faith communities like Jews were being persecuted over centuries in Western Europe, it was under the Muslim territories where they found an ability not only to revive their culture and their customs, but also to revive their language and their poetry and their liturgy. And actually, if we can talk to young Muslims and show them with evidence that Muslims over the generations have been incredibly tolerant and this has been a boon for society, an enlightened society, then I think we have some hope in bringing them forward.
Thank you very much for that. I think that your last point is a very important point because it's very practical. No, we don't only come to the text and say how Islam is great, but come to history and see how Muslims understood through history the relationship with their text, with the Quran, the revelation, with the Prophet, peace be upon him, and also with people of other faiths and the way where they were trying to implement and spreading peace and mutual respect and mutual knowledge. This is also something which is missing with these young Muslims, the knowledge of the principles and the knowledge of history, because history is critical in the whole discussion. And coming also to something which is important in what you said is religion is not the only discussion that we need, the only topic. It's also about social justice and education in our society that is also helping to solve the problem of people having a narrow understanding of Islam as something which is assertive against authority, while we need them to be confident with authority and with their fellow citizen in this society. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thought and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Muhammad Ansar. Thank you so much for being with us and your input. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.